Oh no, I gotta go to Academy down there.
Oh, you already have it?
Yeah, I have it. Since the Sabres on an 11-game winning streak, you know, since we started this academy down in Louisiana, and they, you know, so I feel like, you know, we getting some things rolling, but the academy start is just something. It's a joke that I came up with. Not everybody right, just came, you know, running with it. So it's a good deal, but it's all fun and game.
The next thing that Trey White needs to do for the Trey White Goalie Academy.
I thought maybe he was opening up a power play.
He needs to do the Stevie Johnson, which is he needs to write TreyWhiteGoalieAcademy.com on a T-shirt,
boy.
And then lift up to show it,
no, that...
so that everybody then goes to that website. Which, if you haven't done it yet,
yeah,
you should do it. TreyWhiteGoalieAcademy.com. Punch it in
and do this during a game.
Yeah,
that'll go over well. How about the NFL?
Think about. Well, why not? Is that a penalty?
He'll get fined for it.
Is that a penalty now?
He'll get flagged for it.
Are you sure?
Don't you think he'll get flagged for showing some slogan?
I don't know. Look at all the things they let people... You can play Duck, Duck, Goose now.
Did they flag Ezekiel Elliott for putting money in the Salvation Kettle on Thanksgiving Day?
He got fined for it.
He got fined for donating money.
Donating himself.
Well, he threw $21 in there.
And then didn't he jump in also?
He threw himself, I think, in the next, maybe
okay.
later. I don't know.
He got fined.
He put a 20 and a single in there. He got fined. Yeah, okay. So Trey White will get fined for showing a slogan.
But
maybe not flagged.
Is it worth it to have people visit TreyWhiteGoalieAcademy.com?
Pro Bowl voting is going on.
Get a pick six, lift up the shirt, show the website.
Okay.
That's my advice.
As long as Sean McDermott doesn't bench him.
Hey, speaking of McDermott, he said something yesterday that... you know, it's funny. You want him to take his own advice a little bit, right? Here he is on Benjamin and Holmes.
It obviously didn't work, and those are hard decisions to make because those are human decisions. And the important thing for us is that we continue to take swings, and that's what we did. We stepped up to the plate, and you take a swing, and some of those are going to work, and some aren't. But the only way you get a hit is if you take a swing. The important thing, just as important,
only way you get a hit is if you take a swing.
I would agree, but I'd like you to actually hit at some point.
Well, not just that.
Because all your swings with receivers have pretty much been misses.
You could also kind of apply that to the way they call game days, right? When you are up at the line bluffing into a try to get them to come off sides,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, hey, take a swing.
Right, go for it.
Try to get 3 yards here.
Yeah. And I think somebody tweeted out a link this morning to coaches on 4th and 1 and when they go for it. Apparently, he's like high up on the list.
There's two charts.
Okay.
One of them is likelihood of going for it on 4th and 1.
Okay.
And McDermott is not on that list because the Bills have not had enough of the situations on that chart.
Okay.
The second one is how often they go for it just on 4th down.
Oh, okay.
In which McDermott was third.
Oh,
but
okay.
I don't know if they took into account 4th and 10 when you're down late.
Yeah,
you know,
see, it's fourth down going for it. There are situations to that. Right.
But at the same time, Doug Marrone was last on the list, as you might expect.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. There were different fourth down decisions.
The one was 4th and 1, 35-plus yards away from the end zone in a one-score game, and McDermott hasn't had enough of those opportunities.
Okay.
He didn't make the chart because the sample size was small.
So they do break it down into situations. Every fourth down is not the same.
Right.
It could be 4th and 2 at midfield in a tie game or you're leading or whatever, as opposed to 4th and 4 and you're down 10 points with 4 minutes to go. Of course you're going for it. I saw that comment, and I just thought, to me, what struck me is, yeah, good. You should keep swinging. I don't want you to, you know, to miss on a few things and say, well, we can't try anymore. Of course you should. But I think it's really troublesome that you keep missing on wide receivers. And more so veteran wide receivers, like Zay Jones, turning out to be a good pick. You know, struggled as a rookie, but has certainly made some big strides in year number 2. So that's turned out to be a good pick. The jury is obviously still out on Robert Foster, but an undrafted free agent is found money if he does anything. And, you know, the way he's playing, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's a top 3 guy, but the way he's playing, you'd think he's in your group in 2019, in your group of receivers. You could use that speed and that downfield ability. So, you know, he's made some nice plays. Again, an undrafted free agent. It's the veteran guys. It's the free agents and the trades that you've gone after that have all been bad. You know, it's how many misses now? If you want to throw in Benjamin, that's 4. Benjamin, Curley, Coleman, Pryor. So the guys are bringing in that have a body of work, and especially Benjamin, because these guys Bean and McDermott would have known Kelvin Benjamin, obviously, from Carolina, and would have been around him all the time and known everything about him in terms of character, work ethic, practice habits, games, all this other stuff. You're missing on guys that have been in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, you're missing on the players you should be a little bit better at evaluating, since they have a professional body of work for you to look at, and all of them. Andre Holmes, I'm not even going to throw in Andre Holmes. Holmes, what did you expect from Andre Holmes? He was more of a special teams guy. The veteran receivers they brought in have done nothing.
The Kelvin Benjamin one kind of feels a little bit like the Robin Leonard trade, right? You call your old team and say, I want him. And you give up a decent asset. I mean, in Murray's case, he gave up a first rounder for Leonard.
Yeah, that was a good asset.
But a third round pick for this guy. We know him. He's our guy. We'll take him.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just any old guy, pro personnel guy in the league. This was the guy on our team that we came from. We want him. And it really went bad. How, you know, he says it's a swing and you miss. How big of a swing and miss do you think it is? Does it make them look really bad?
No. I would say if you want to compare the two, giving up a first round pick for Robin Leonard is worse than giving up a third round pick for Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, I don't freak out over a third round pick. You know, if it was, I mean, far more people would be upset at moving up in the draft and getting Sammy Watkins than giving up a third round pick for Kelvin Benjamin. So I don't think it's, I found it. Well, first off, there's no shock factor. The writing's on the wall. You knew Kelvin Benjamin was going to be an ex-Bill for a myriad of reasons. Either A, you know, they would not want to re-sign him for what he's trying to get on the open market, or B, you could just tell the snap counts were dropping. I mean, you could see his role was being diminished. And in a season where for the last month or so, Sean McDermott keeps talking about young guys, young guys, young guys. We got to evaluate the young guys. Let's get in Wyatt Teller. Look, Jeremiah Searles is playing. Let's get in Foster. Let's get in McKenzie. It's all about getting young guys out there, getting snaps for these guys. You could see Kelvin Benjamin, for multiple reasons, was not going to be here. I just thought he would finish the season here, and then he would just leave via free agency. So there's no shock factor. I don't think you'd go like, wow, they released Kelvin Benjamin. Where the heck is that coming from? What a major screw-up on your... You could see the guy, his future was shot here. So, and a third-round pick, I don't freak out over a third-round pick. You know, it's puzzling only because you knew this guy. And maybe it's, I don't know, who knows? Maybe it's the injury, right? There's some speculation that he was never the same guy because of the knee injury he suffered last year. Whatever. I don't think it makes him... To me, it's not Benjamin. It's the latest in a line of guys you're trying to get that aren't working out for whatever reason. And that's more troublesome for me than anything else.
Well, he's the biggest
evaluation of these guys.
For their offense, he's the one big ticket item that they tried, right? Let's look at all of their additions to the offense. Free agency.
Yeah, Curley was a free agent.
Curley,
Coleman was a seventh round pick.
Not just receiver. Every offensive move that they have made.
Yeah.
That is not a draft pick.
Well,
Benjamin's the big ticket item. He was a trade for a third round pick. You look at Bodine, right? What you're doing is you're shopping in the discount store.
Yeah, now you're going. I mean, if you go back to last year, Tolbert,
Tolbert, Patrick DeMarco,
Chris Ivory.
Yeah, you are going off like the clearance rack, except for Benjamin, which is not the biggest ticket, but he is their number one targeted piece to fix the offense outside of draft picks like Josh Allen. And it didn't go well. So I think that's disappointing. You know, we're mentioning all the other guys that they have acquired for the offense. Like, if you want to say Corey Coleman or Deontay Thompson or Andre Holmes, or, you know, you can only get so mad about it because what are you expecting from all these
right,
moves?
That's what I said. Holmes, to me, it's just whatever. They released Andre Holmes. Okay.
They're all such second or even third level moves
right.
that you hope this offseason they kind of change course and change the entire expectation of what they can do on offense. Brandon Bean in an interview said they want to be an explosive offense, or maybe explosive is not the right word, but they want to be a high-powered offense.
Yeah, he was asked about what the Rams and the Chiefs are doing and said, you know, sure, you'd like to be that kind of offense eventually.
We'll see if they actually put that into practice and draft receivers and draft line offensive linemen and install a system that does exactly that, or if they, you know, continue to commit to running first and running to establish the pass and stuff
well,
like that.
They've never changed. Neither guy, Brandon Bean nor Sean McDermott, neither guy has ever swayed from the philosophy of you build up front, you build to win the line of scrimmage. So, I don't know how that impacts run game versus passing game and philosophically what you think wins in the National Football League, but they still both talk about winning the line of scrimmage, and Brandon Bean has again this season talked about weather and playing in cold weather games. You know, I don't know if it was Matt Parrino in the New York Upstate or Matthew Fairborn in the Athletic, but one of those guys talked to Brandon Bean for a series. I think it was NewYorkUpstate.com. And referencing that Rams-Chiefs game, Bean was asked about, does this represent another shift in philosophy? You know, that teams are, this is really going to, we already know they're pass happy in the league, but this is really taking it to another level. And he again referenced, we'll see. When the weather turns in December, will scoring go down? Will teams be able to pass the ball as much? We're on a record pace for completion percentage, passing yards, and passing touchdowns. And he said, let's see what happens in December. So everything from Bean and McDermott has gone towards you still need to build the line of scrimmage and you still need to have a running game, because when you can't throw the ball, what are you going to do? So I don't know. That's why I said I think you can be very happy with everything they've done defensively, but I think you could have just question after question after question in terms of believing whether or not they can build the right offense around Josh Allen.
Let's do a couple more, because there's a common theme here. Marshall Newhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Signed him.
He didn't work out.
Traded
yeah,
him.
Right.
A.J. McCarron.
Right.
Signed him.
Yeah.
Traded him away. Yeah, like they are trying to get these pieces to help the offense, and they are going to the clearance rack, and then very quickly after saying, oh, this is definitely not the right answer. This is definitely not what we need. How about this guy? We like his makeup. We like the way that he his work ethic. You know what? Not anymore. You know, he's not good enough to be on this team. It seems to be a theme. I don't think it means that they are completely unable to identify offensive talent, but it means that when it comes to finding bang for the buck in that department, they haven't really been too good at that. Even if you look at guys like Zay Jones, they traded up for Zay Jones. Mm-hmm. You know, this is back to the defensive side, Tremaine Edmonds might be a great player. He looks like he's going to be a great player. He's 20 years old, which is phenomenal. But they seem to spend a lot on the pieces that they believe in.
Yes,
Allen, Edmonds, Dawkins, Jones. They're willing to pay more than the going rate. And then because you do that, you have to go to the bargain bin for the rest, and that's where you just keep coming up with nothing.
I also think, at least maybe not as much this year's moves, but last year's moves, especially if you bring up offense, and I'll bring up, I'm trying to think, two guys for sure. Three, I guess I could throw Andre Holmes on this list. For sure Mike Tolbert, for sure Patrick DeMarco, maybe to a lesser extent, Andre Holmes. If you look at some of their moves, their offensive moves, they did a number of moves last year based on character. It wasn't based as much on actual on-field football skills. It was based on how this guy fits in the locker room, right? Mike Tolbert was not a move that was going to make you an explosive offense, but Mike Tolbert was a guy that Sean McDermott wanted in the room to turn the culture around. Patrick DeMarco is, you know, a fullback, but Patrick DeMarco was the guy they wanted in the room to help turn the culture around. So some of the moves they've made, Andre Holmes, they liked Andre Holmes in the receiver room with some young players.
Right.
So a lot of, you know, not a lot, but some of the moves they've made have not been based on what this guy is necessarily going to bring on the field, but it's what he's going to bring to this overall plan that we have to turn this thing around.
Thundersnow has arrived. Thundersnow reports from Parkside, from Main and Hurdle, from downtown. The
So snow and claps of thunder.
Was it just a clap? Did we just see a flash? It's not even snowing here.
It's not. Yeah, so we can't have thundersnow if it's not snowing, can you?
No. Thundersnow has arrived.
You know what? We are having light flurries. Look in the light across the way. We have some very
that's why they're called light flurries. You can only see them if you're actually looking at a street light. Yeah, light flurries. It's not actually snowing anywhere else, just by the lights.
You know? But anyway, you know, but this discussion, I think, is interesting. What's the biggest ticket item has been Allen. You know, Zay Jones was move up for a second-round pick. Dawkins would have been, what was he? Was he round two as well? The trade of the three for Ben. The big ticket item on offense has been doing everything in your power to move up to get to the point where you spend a first-round draft pick on your quarterback. Now, what's the next big-ticket item? The Bills have 10 picks. The Bills have $80, $90 million in cap space. You know, last year's draft was, sure, Allen was first, and then what did they do after that? Defense, 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 defense with the next four picks. And last year's free agency, where did they spend their big money? defensive tackle, pass rusher. So, I mean, it's a critical offseason. We know that. I'm not making some landmark statement. But this does worry me that Bean and McDermott have not done well in many of their offensive moves, and they do have the ability. They could go heavy in the draft offense if they so desire. They could lean on free agency for the offense if they so desire with a lot of the cap space they have. I wonder what they're going to do.
Well, they better lean on.
They have to get at least one, if not two, offensive line starters. Now, free agency draft, they've got to get at least two wide receivers. They need another tight end, at least one tight end. They need another running back. They've got a lot. That's what? Half, two, four. That's at least half a dozen spots, key spots on offense that you have to address this offseason, whether it's free agency draft or the combination of the two. The track record says, I don't know if they can do it because the moves they've made on that side of the ball, for the most part, have not panned out. Jones and Dawkins would be the exception, and we'll see on Foster. But all that was undrafted free agent.
It's all about receiver. Zay Jones is not your number one.
No, he can't be. He's a good. He might be your. He might be a three. I mean, if you can get two other receivers to come in ahead of Zay Jones, he's a nice guy in the top three. And again, your tight ends are what? You know, I don't think Charles Clay's back. So, Jason Kroom and Logan Thomas, you got to upgrade your tight end position, too. 803-0550 to join us this morning. 888-550-2550. Jeff, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm listening to the program. I mean, I don't think they're doing discount shelf. I just think they're trying to go after a play. I think they're just taking what's available. I don't think the good players wanted to come here. And, would you ever think that Bean maybe wanted to get better receivers, but they just wouldn't come to Buffalo? Because
the one guy, John Brown, they offered a contract and he went to Baltimore.
And remember, they had Bolden here and he retired. They were going after, who's the guy went to Baltimore last year? Macklin they tried to get and he didn't want to come here.
It's probably a little bit of both, Jeff, because they also wanted to clear the cap and open things up. That's why this offseason is really the true test. If they throw a pile of money at Dante Moncrief and he still doesn't come here, then they might find they have a problem trying to get top talent. It's on Allen. Allen's got four more games to show everybody, especially the offensive players in the league or out the receivers. Hey, come here. I'm dynamic. I'm worth playing with.
I get what you say, Jeff. Thanks for the call about, guy. How do you get a guy to come wherever, right? But remember, last year, this past off season, okay, the Bears had Mitchell Trubisky play, 12 games maybe in year one?
Yeah.
And he was so-so. And then they went out and got Allen Robinson to sign a nice big wide receiver contract to come to Chicago.
Big contract.
Again, off of a year with a rookie quarterback who was, you can get guys, depending on how you structure it, depending on the money you offer, you can get guys in free agency to come play for your team.
And that's a new coach. That's Matt Nagy. He would have, who knows? Some players need to be convinced why I should go to a place and know who the coach is. Others, what?
Right.
What's
the contract?
Who am I signing with?
Right.
You don't have to have the conversation. You don't just care about that kind of stuff.
Right. Some guys, it is right. Who's a receiver? Sure. If I was a receiver, yes, I'd be worried about who the quarterback is and who's throwing me the ball. But some guys look at it and go, all right, young quarterback. Hey, they're offering me, 40-something million dollars? Okay, sure.
Right. I'm trying to think. We talked to somebody recently. Might have been Carter Hutton. I don't want to say it was him. We asked Jeff Skinner about the trade, and he knew about Buffalo and talked to people that played here, Zach Delpy, and knew about the young core, and it's close to home, so he specifically said, that's a place I'm okay to go to. And I don't think it was Carter Hutton, but there's somebody where we asked, hey, did you think it's a good opportunity? And the answer was effectively, again, I'm not going to say it is Hutton. Nah, not really. I'm just show up, and I'll do my job. Hmm. So some guys just, how much and how many years am I going to live there for?
I would be the kind of guy that would do my research. Do I know anybody who played there? Do I know anybody who played who knows this coach?
Okay,
who is
the
quarterback?
Hypothetically, you do your research.
Yeah.
And your research says, what position do you play?
I'm a wide receiver.
You're a wide receiver. Yeah. Perfect. You do your research, and you find out that you think the best spot for you is Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas City offers you 3 years and $35 million.
Right.
And the Bills offer you 4 years and $52
million. Yeah, well,
you did your research.
Right, and I'm getting $17 million more from the
where
other
place. Where are you signing?
Yeah, well, but that's what I said.
I know.
For the argument of how do you get people to come here.
Money's still money.
Money is money, right. I mean, for years, there have been free agents who have gone to losing football teams.
Let's talk about what kind of receiver you would be. Possession receiver.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You don't see me as a deep threat.
Not so much. Not so much.
Contested catch guy?
You know what? You can stretch the defense. That's what you'll do.
I can't even stretch my own hamstrings. How am I going to stretch a defense? What kind of receiver
would I be? Howard's the guy that takes the top off the defense.
I would be the guy who runs the one-yard route. Like, and the rub play guy. I'd be the rub play guy.
You could do that.
Let me be the rub play guy because I can't go downfield.
Better yet, we'll put you on the fake jet sweep. Here comes the motion.
You know what me being a wide receiver would be the equivalent of the quarterback who goes out as a wide receiver in the Wildcat, and you know all they're doing is just standing in their spot. Like, up, oh, Ryan Tannehill's out wide in the Wildcat. He's not moving. That's me as a wide receiver. All right, Martin Biron is going to join us when we get back. The media mogul himself. We'll talk about the Sabres-Leafs game, among other things, with Mr. Biron. That is coming up in a moment. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550 here on WGR.
It's time to talk Sabres hockey on WGR Sports Radio 550. Now, Marty Biron joins Howard and Jeremy. Marty Biron's appearance on WGR is brought to you by Paul William Belch, your power of attorney, by Jim's Steakout, because hockey fans eat hoagies, by Niagara Falls Memorial Medical Center, exceptional care, exceptionally close, and by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth.
Marty's on the way in just a moment. Bill's back on the practice field today. As they get ready to take on the Jets, Kelvin Benjamin went through waivers unclaimed. He is a free agent. Andre Holmes was claimed in waivers by the Denver Broncos. They lost Emmanuel Sanders for the season. He suffered a torn Achilles in practice. Taron Johnson's season has ended. Shoulder surgery for the Bills' rookie cornerback. Jason Kroom didn't practice yesterday with a groin. John Miller was limited with an oblique. Thursday night football matchup is the Jags at the Titans. Hockey news, Anaheim wins a fifth straight game. They beat the Blackhawks 4-2. Willie Nylander says he anticipates playing tonight against Detroit. College hoops, good night for the locals. UB beat Lemoyne. Canisius wins their game with Robert Morris. Bonner routes Siena. The Bulls, by the way, 8-0, remain unbeaten. They will play at St. Bonaventure Saturday afternoon. LeBron had 42. Lakers beat the Spurs. Curry had 42. Warriors over the Cavs. Toronto's got the best record in the NBA after another win. They're now 21-5. Your headlines brought to you by Exergen. Cold and flu season hits hard, especially for the millions of people living with heart disease, asthma, or cancer. A fever can be a sign of the flu, which could mean a trip to the emergency room. Use the number one hospital-preferred thermometer, the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Backed by more than 70 clinical studies, it's the best way to stay safe this cold and flu season. On our West Air hotline is the mogul himself, Martin Biron, the pride of Quebec. Good morning, Mr. Biron. How are you?
Good morning. It must be a good show this morning. You guys are actually on time. Usually I get a phone call about 7:38, 7:39 because you ran long in the first segment, but early today.
You must be talking about somebody else, Marty. That never happens to us. I have no idea.
Yeah, when we're not late, that means it's early.
This is our on-time rule.
Marty, I was thinking about this. I asked Sal a question yesterday about a book, yep. About writing a book. You can write a book when you're done with this whole thing? Media mogul status, working not just playing in the league, but working at all these, you know, different outlets. I think a book should be in your future.
I actually thought about it later in my career, and I started writing things down like stories and you know, funny anecdotes or some serious stuff. And then I'm like, and then I've talked to some people that have written book, and there's a lot of work, and you don't have to write it yourself. You can have somebody to write it for you, but it's still a lot of work. So I want to gather more, probably before that would ever get to that point, but, maybe that's, you know, there's many ways to tell stories. There's, you know, being with you guys in the morning or doing some events or just hanging out on the golf course with some people, and then you can really tell stories. I like to play golf, so that's my way of telling stories.
There you go. How about the Leafs? I mean, I'd imagine that your time here with the Sabres includes plenty of memories about those games.
Yeah, there is a ton of memories, obviously. I remember that New Year's Day, 2000, I think it was, the turn of the millennium. That was a pretty fun game at home. Miro Chetan's wife Ingrid, who's a opera singer, sang the national anthem. It was really cool. So I remember that one. I think we beat them like 8-2 or whatever. I remember a game in Toronto, and this is gonna, I don't want to pick on anybody, but I remember a game in Toronto where Ty Domi was running around like a crazy person, and Brian Campbell was coming back for a puck in the corner, And I swear, like, Ty Domi was yelling at Brian Campbell, don't go get it, don't go get it, I'm going to hurt you, I'm going to hurt you. And Supi absolutely stopped, and Ty got the puck. And I was like, come on. He goes, are you kidding? He goes, would you go and get that puck in the corner? I'm like, yeah, you're right. I probably would let him go get it too. But, you know, moments in games like that that were kind of fun and maybe different than other teams you play against.
They showed before the game the other night, Marty, they showed on the Jumbotron, a series of clips between the Sabres and the Leafs. And they showed one of the many, Ray Domi fights. It was a classic. Yep. I mean, those guys were just unloading on each other. But I want to ask you, I actually wanted to bring up the playoff series against them, okay, back in 99, because I'm sitting in the arena the other night, the Leafs come out, the Sabres come out, the place is going nuts for both of their teams, and I thought, man, if these teams played in the playoffs, what it would be like in both buildings, even the days between games, the stuff going on between the fan bases, it would be phenomenal. What do you remember about the 99 conference finals?
Well, I only was there for the first two games in Toronto because I was still in Rochester at the time, and we were in the conference finals against the Philadelphia Phantoms.
Yeah.
So we had about 4 days in between game two of our conference finals and game three, which was in Rochester. And Dom was hurt, and nobody knew that Dom Hasek was injured. And I came into Toronto, and I remember it was really funny because there was some rumbling that maybe Hasek was not healthy to play game one. Hmm. And all the media, and when I say all the media, when Toronto comes into town, even if it's a regular season, there's about three times more media than on a regular day. So imagine a conference finals in Toronto. There is a boatload of media, and they were all covering the player's entrance to see, is Hasek going to be there? Did they call up a goaltender? What's going on? And I remember I came into Toronto, and Rip Simonic, the longtime equipment manager, and the Sabres decided, you know, the best way to bring Marty into the building is actually through the front door because nobody is guarding the front door. So I came in at the Air Canada Centre at the time, right through the front door with my equipment on my back, sticks and all of that, and went right down to the locker room, and nobody knew that I was even in the Toronto area. Nobody had noticed that I was there. So I thought it was funny that, you know, even though the coverage was amazing and that the media was going crazy and you could sense that rivalry between the media members, the Buffalo members and the Toronto members, but, you know, little things like that go unnoticed. And there's so many of those little things in playoff series that are important to a playoff series. They're important to a team that the media don't know. So I can't wait because that, you know, you could already start to feel the hatred between the Toronto side and the Buffalo side, even just the other day in the building. Can you imagine if that was a playoff series? Yeah. That would be out of this world.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Hey, so the game the other night, we were talking about this earlier. I thought, Marty, from start to finish, really, again, start to finish, entire game, one of the best games the Sabres have played all season, and I think better than any game that I saw them play in the streak.
You know what? The streak, there was some great games in the streak and some comebacks and ability to create some offense. I think that's what the Sabres are struggling right now, and the ability to create some offense to be able to get to three goals, to get to four goals, and you know, be able to solidify wins like that. But you're right, especially in the circumstances, you look at playing, having to travel to Florida, playing Thursday, Friday, then you have 2 days of basically nothing, and then you play Nashville, Toronto.
Yep.
I thought the effort, and if it has, you know, anything to do with, you know, everybody works hard in the National Hockey League on a nightly basis, but the effort to give the extra mile, the effort to get in a block, a shot block and get in a shot lane, just the effort to skate a little bit faster, to be first on puck, to get to the front of the net. I thought there was a lot that the Sabres did that they have to be really, really proud of the way they handled Toronto. And for a lot of those guys, you know, we've talked about, there's a lot of new players on the team. This Toronto-Buffalo rivalry and the fans, it's new to them. So it had to be a little bit of a shock, too, for, you know, Jeff Skinner and Casey Mittelstadt and Tage Thompson and even Dahlin to be like, whoa, what's going on here? This is unlike any other regular season games that we've played. So I thought they responded really well to the Leafs, who, you know, you say whatever you want to say. They're a machine over there in Toronto. They wall their lines really, really good. They have depth. The only part that you can take advantage of is their defense, and I really think the Sabres did a good job taking advantage of that that defense for the Leafs.
Marty, I want to ask you about both goaltenders. While we're talking about the Leafs, Freddie Anderson looks like the real deal.
Well, he is the real deal. He's their MVP this year, and that's a lot to be said with, you know, you've got Tavares, you got Marner, and Matthews now has got, what, 15 goals in 14 games? But their MVP is Freddie Anderson. And last season and 2 years ago, he didn't start the season really well. He was kind of searching for his comfort zone. A lot of time he was a foot or 2 foot outside of his crease. I mean, he's a big goalie. And the key for a big goalie is to try to make everything look easy. You don't have to put yourself, challenging shots, because then a pass and you have to dive back. Like, Frederik Anderson has definitely found this game by staying inside the blue paint, by, you know, still being big, but he's always in a good position, and the puck always hits him right in the belly. And that's not mm-hmm. because the Sabres are not trying to shoot for the post and trying to take good shots. It's just that Frederik Anderson has that effect right now because he's covering the net well. He seems to always be reading the play well, and he's always in good position.
And on the other side, Carter Hutton's had a very good year, Marty, but I think one of the unsung heroes, or maybe not talked about enough, Linus Ullmark still has not lost a game in regulation. His save percentage is really good. He has been a big part of where the Sabres are, and kind of sneaking up on people, I think, because he's the young guy, but he's playing so well at this point. When you see Ullmark, do you think sky's the limit? Like, what do you think with him?
I don't know if sky is the limit, but I think the Sabres are doing a good job. I mean, there's a transition period for Linus Ullmark right now, and everything's going good, and that's great, and he's playing well, and he's getting big games also. I mean, playing against the Toronto Maple Leafs at home is a big game for him, and he responded well. Playing in Florida on the back end of a back-to-back is a big game for him, and he responded well. So he's gotten points in the last two games that he's played, against two pretty good teams. I mean, Florida were not the Tampa Bay Lightning, but still. And I think that the transition period where this year is going to be, obviously, Carter Hutton is going to play more, and he's your number one, and Linus is going to just kind of, you know, get some experience and get some maturity and being here for a full season. Next year, you may get more of a battle between the two of them, and, you know, maybe you split even down the middle, 40-40. In year three, if everything's going well, this is where I'm looking to Linus Ullmark to say, okay, now take the giant leap forward. Be the guy, because the Sabres will need to have an answer by year three if Linus Ullmark will be their guy or not. And I think he's on the right track for that. I think he's learning a ton from Carter Hutton, which is excellent, because Carter is a really good veteran, and his sound bites after games are always dead on. And you're seeing Ullmark, you know, he's got the personality, and he's, you know, a little quirky at times, but you're seeing him being very serious when talking about hockey. And I think that Hutton has a lot to do with the way that Linus is playing and the way that he's acting as a pro.
Marty, what specifically does the young goalie learn or look for from the veteran guy?
Like I said, you sit in the room next to one another. You pay attention to, you know, what's Carter's body language in between periods? What's Carter's body language after a game? How does he talk to his defense? Carter Hutton plays the puck extremely well. Well, how can I, as a young guy, be able to play the puck as well as Carter? And maybe it's not going to be like that, but Linus is a really good puck-handling goaltender, which is different from a lot of European goalies, but he can play the puck really well, which is another notch that he can use for his overall game. But the most important thing, I really believe, it's practice habits and working together. And Carter is not as big as Linus. Carter is a much smaller goaltender in the big, you know, he's not small, but still, Linus Ullmark is a big, big goalie. How do you simplify your game? Because Carter Hutton's game is very simple. It's very precise. He reads the play well. He's in the position all the time. And so for Linus, who seems to be more erratic at times in the past, he's gone to the simple game. He's really, you look at himself, he makes a lot of glove save, and I laugh because Linus has that big windmill glove, but it's not one that he's out of control and he's sliding across the crease to make a windmill glove save. It's one that he stopped, he's ready, and then he just reacts to the puck that way. I think there's a lot that Linus is learning both on the ice and in the locker room with Carter Hutton.
Quick one before you go, please. Lawrence Pilot, Marty, if, when all the Sabres defensemen are healthy, has Pilot done enough to, A, be in the top six, or at least earn a few more games to show if he can be in the top six?
I think he's earned enough to have a few more games. I definitely earned enough to even stay in the top six, but I don't know that would be the best case scenario. And for a young guy, you want to be in the NHL, and I totally get that. But your top six has played really well, and all seven guys have played well. And the experience that Pilot is getting in Rochester, you know, that he was leading the league in scoring at one point. Unfortunately, that's no more because he's been up with Buffalo. I think there's some really good things that can come out of that, unless he was lights out. Listen, in the next few games, if he plays 25, 26 minutes a game and he's completely lights out, then you may want to keep him for a longer period of time. But then you have to deal with waivers and having too many guys on the roster. So I think he'd probably go back and dominate in the AHL, but man, I'm so excited for the day that he's a regular on this roster, because he's definitely an unexpected guy. Having signed as an undrafted free agent, European free agent, I'm just surprised the Sabres were able to get him. I mean, there was 30 other teams that could have gotten him, and he picked here. And the scouting staff, and again, Jason Bottrell, they did a fantastic job identifying that he would be a good fit here with the Sabres.
Marty, as always, thanks. Always nice talking hockey with you, sir.
Awesome. Well, you guys enjoy this football weekend. There's only a hockey game on Saturday, so let's go Bills.
And an afternoon game. Love the matinee games.
That's going to be awesome, yes. And then there's a Buttes game right after at Harbor Center, so for the hockey fanatic, it's a big hockey Saturday there.
Make a day out of it. All right, we'll talk to you next Thursday.
Awesome.
Thanks, Marty. Marty Baron on the Western Hotline joins us Thursday mornings at 7:30 if we're on time. Brought to you by Paul William Belts, your power of attorney. By Jim Steakout, because hockey fans eat hoagies. By Firth Jewelers, for all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. And by Niagara Falls Memorial Medical Center, exceptional care, exceptionally close.
I'm going to ask for some advice during the Weiner Line. I need to reach out to some of our listeners and ask for some help.
You're reaching out to the Weiner Line callers?
Well,
advice?
The people that live. I got questions. I need answers.
Jack Eichel should be embarrassed about himself. He's got 5 goals. I don't care about how many assists he has. From all the money he makes, Dahlin can hit harder than him. It's sad that he can go in the corners. He makes Eichel is like, it's 50.
Did you say it's sickening?
Alrighty.
Okay. Hey, there's thunder snow today.
And you want advice from these people.
Yeah, I need some advice. By advice, I mean I've been doing some research these days. So, as you may have noticed, I've got nothing to do. So I'm...
Really? Okay.
I'm growing my beard out as far as I can, humanly possible.
Okay.
It's a good... 3 weeks passed where it normally, yeah, maybe.
I should measure the depth of the beard.
So I've been reading articles and, I've been seeing how it works. I learned about the 3 growth stages of hair. Yeah, turns out there's 3 growth stages. So my advice is, it's not really much advice, just like, one of the first things I read was, you've got to give it at least 3 months before you even think about, like, what you're doing from there.
I feel itchy just looking at your face. I mean, you don't scratch that thing all the time?
Nah. It doesn't itch. I mean, I have a beard all the time. It's just not ever...
When we used to do playoff beards,
yeah.
While I'm glad the Sabres were in the playoffs, after about a week or two, I'd be like, oh my God, do I want him to be eliminated? No, it was just, I hate
this
that
is,
stuff.
Basically, my beard is normally at about a playoff beard length for me. It doesn't grow that fast. Right now, as if they made the cup finals and they're in game 6. Like, this is long for me.
Okay.
A long time. And like, I kind of just want to know, for anybody that had one. Like, I've got friends that used to think that they could never grow, and then it turns out you just wait long enough and one will show up, even for some people to think they can't get one.
Right.
So I've been the one that's been at, like, stage one, and is it... One article I read said anywhere from 2 months to 6 years is the life cycle of growing one. And I'm telling you, I don't think I'm going to make it 6 years. I'm in this transition phase, you know, where I'm going to see Hamilton this weekend. If I put on a nice jacket and pants and, you know, try and look nice, I am going to be the big, bushy, kind of in-between guy.
It's okay, though. I mean, it's fine. Like, it's not a sloppy look.
No, it's not. The question is, how long will it take to get... It might never do
six
it. There's some DNA going on there. But is it a three-month thing where maybe somebody listening, you tried this as well and thought, I've never thought I could get a big, huge one.
Yeah.
And then after 6 months, turns out I had one.
Yeah.
You know, I've never even given it the shot.
Are you aiming for, like, Brett Kiesel?
I don't think I can ever get to Brett Kiesel.
Brent Burns, Joe Thornton. You're not aiming for, like really long.
I don't
think. Like, where you could hide your car keys in it.
I don't think I can ever get that far.
Okay. But I guess I'd wonder what your goal is.
I don't know.
Like, if your goal is to try and see, like, hey, how far could this thing really go?
You know what? I'm Kramer driving to see how far the needle can go to the E.
Before, right.
That's I'm going as far as I can go.
When you read the stages of hair growth, does it hit a point where each person's beard will just stop growing?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess I'd wonder how far is that point for you?
Right. That's what I'm...
And that's different for each person, I assume?
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to find out, is how far.
How far. And this is how long since you actually trimmed, shaved, anything?
I haven't trimmed it in probably a month, and I don't know.
Okay, so...
It's a little bit past where it normally gets, and, yeah.
I'd give it through the winter.
Oh, I've already committed to at least going to, like, mid-February.
Yeah, I was going to say, get through to the spring.
I'm pretty positive I'm going to make it till after the Super Bowl. That's just kind of a date I've targeted.
Actually, here's the deal. Look, Sabres are going to be in the playoffs.
Well, if I start the playoff beard, then...
That's what I'm saying. Are you going to shave and then regrow a playoff beard, or do you want this in place to be your playoff beard?
Neither, really. It's just going to be my life. Right. Joe writes in, I'm at 11 months. My beard looks like it did at 4. Okay. Well, okay, I mean, so I've never made it to 4.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'd get crazy after a while. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550. We will chat Bills football. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk next with Sal. That's coming up in a moment. WGR.